Go ahead, start.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, across West Virginia, across the United States of America, and around the globe. This is Resistance Radio on enlightenradio.org, coming to you every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. This is your host, Stuart Acuff, a very happy resistance warrior this morning, along with my great friend and leader, John Case, the president and CEO of EnlightenRadio.org, and working with us today as co-host of this show and as our engineer, making it possible for us to bring these thoughts and words to your ears this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning. So there's quite a bit of excitement here regionally, especially in the state of Virginia this morning. Why don't you summarize what happened there?
Well, it was just a wonderful repudiation of Trump. Ralph Northam, a pediatrician from Virginia, won the election by, last night or early this morning on television, was 9 percentage points in Virginia, which is overwhelming in statewide purples, in a statewide purple state election. 9 percentage points. Everybody assumed that the polls were mistaken, that the election was much closer than it looked like it was, coming down the stretch. We had a bad day in Virginia yesterday, as those of you listening to me in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia will know. It was raining and somewhat cold, or at least colder than what we've been. Somebody told me yesterday the high was about 41 degrees.
There
was
drizzly, reason, miserable. Yeah.
Drizzly, miserable. It was a morning to wake up and catch your breath and perhaps despair at what we were looking at. But, oh, what a glorious day it was. Democrats in Virginia swept all of the top offices in Virginia. The votes aren't totally counted yet, I don't think. I'm out west and haven't seen the morning shows this morning, but they also were positioned to, Democrats were also positioned last night to possibly take back the Virginia House of Delegates. A stunning victory in Virginia for Democrats, and a great repudiation of Trump. And then in New Jersey, a Democrat in New Jersey, Phil Murphy, was elected governor, overwhelming the poor person who was running as sort of the successor to Chris Christie. She came out of his campaign and his administration, and the Democrat in New Jersey just obliterated all that was left of Chris Christie's operation in New Jersey. It's gonna be hard to run as a Republican in New Jersey for a while now, I think.
I mean,
what a great day! What a day to celebrate! What a day to give thanks to our Creator! What a wonderful, wonderful day.
Well, I understand there's some mayors and some state state delegate,
yeah,
as well
county,
as a county congressman. Is there any Congress elected this time? No,
none.
Next year,
none. Of course, everybody's up next year. One of the things I kept hearing last night on, and you'll hear me say this several times this morning, but one of the things I kept hearing last night on television is the Democrats have found a way to weaponize the resistance. Hallelujah! Hallelujah! Praise the Creator. Democrats have found a way to weaponize the resistance. And of course, John Case and I have been talking about this since last November, since a year ago. Are we able, would we be able, and we being the universal we, all of us, not John and me, but all of us across America, would we be able to build a resistance that was significant and could slow Trump's march towards fascism? Could we hold him back a bit? Could we stand up for American values and American principles and the notion of expanded freedom and expanded justice, expanding to everybody, all of our brothers and sisters of the human race? And could that resistance turn into a powerful social movement? And if it did, could we connect that social movement to electoral politics? And it has happened, John Case. It has happened.
And I was skeptical, but it has happened. It has happened. It looks like there's a plethora of candidates, I'm told, right? People who are willing to run.
A
lot of women,
now
especially.
Now that people see you can win, Now that you see that people see you can win in this environment and you can beat Trumpism, one of the things CNN said is that Trumpism without Trump doesn't work.
You mean not everybody can lie every other second and get away with it? You mean only a rare few? Okay, I see. Okay,
right. only a rare few. It was funny because Ed Gillespie, who most of our listeners know because you're a sophisticated, politically aware, woke bunch, thank goodness. Most of our listeners know that the candidate for governor in Virginia, Republican candidate for governor in Virginia, was Ed Gillespie, who came out of the original Bush White House, Bush number one's White House. He was an old Republican political operative lobbyist, sort of even kind of an older sage head on politics and campaigns. It was his second time to try to run in Virginia. And this guy, for all intents and purposes, externally looked like what would pass today for a Republican moderate, Ed Gillespie, but he ran as a Trump fascist, and it didn't work. I mean, this guy ran to pass a law saying save all the statues of all the traitors across Virginia. He campaigned on that. The entire Trump program, and he just got beat. And of course, what does Trump do? Yesterday morning, Trump disavows him with a tweet.
Yeah, right. That was it. He didn't follow me.
Right. Threw him under the bus. Now, this, John Case, was right after Trump had done a robocall for him across Virginia, you know, those automatic calls where this disembodied voice of a famous politician comes into your ear saying, vote for my friend Ed Gillespie. And, of course, it was Trump's voice pushing his faithful across Virginia to vote for him. And you know, we link that, John, and we look in the broader context, and we see that Trump is at about 36% approval rating, the lowest rating of any American president since they started polling on
lower than Nixon?
National elections.
Lower than Nixon?
What were the what?
Lower than Nixon, you think?
Yeah, it was. Lower than Nixon. I mean, 36% is maybe a little bit higher, a few percentage points above what I consider the number of authoritarians in almost any group of human beings, about 30%, 30-35%. In any group of human beings, they're going to be authoritarians looking for daddy to help lead them through life in the world.
Right. Yeah.
And people latched onto a terrible daddy when they latched onto Trump. I'm telling you what, John, you got a song for us this morning?
I do. Rising was what you requested to go first. Do you still want to go with the Rising here this morning?
Let's go.
Let's okay. We can do that. Let me.
And we're going to come back after the Rising with a poem about yesterday.
Okay. Let me get this. Hold on, I got to make sure everything is cranking here, buddy. You know,
That's
well, there we
and
go.
Our listeners are patient.
Okay. So we got that going. Hold on. We got issues.
Uh-oh,
hold on. Say something. Say something profound here, Stuart.
Hey, this is a great morning for us.
There we go.
The resistance is winning. We're going to take back the Congress in 2018. Yesterday in Virginia and New Jersey, we saw what is possible in terms of political change in America. The resistance is winning. It's building every day. God bless everybody in the sound of my voice who's been working in and on this resistance.
Hey, you know, you're sounding great with the Rising in the background.
Oh, good.
I don't know what you can hear.
Turn up the Rising. I didn't mean to talk over it.
Oh, no, it sounds good. Your words just fit perfectly with it, Stuart. Why don't we? It's on right now. We'll let it play through, okay? You want to do that?
Okay, yeah, please do.
Okay, thanks, man. Hey, there you are again. I lost you for a second here. Well, let's wind down the Rising here for a second. There you go. Okay. And welcome back here, Stuart.
All right. The boss, Bruce Springsteen, talking to us about what's going on. The Rising in America.
Kind of felt like that yesterday. Yeah.
It sure did. And last week I wrote this poem, John. I'm out west, actually in Las Vegas, visiting someone who's very important to me.
We used to call that lost wages, didn't we?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I haven't been close to a casino since I've been out here. I'm in the old Vegas. It's a lot of fun. It's where the real people live. So I wrote this poem last week, actually looking at yesterday with some bit of trepidation, but with determination. So I hope you like this. The stars hide at night now. The firmament doesn't glimmer nor twinkle. Our moon shines less brightly, leaving night deep and dark. But even in the lightless night, our brothers and sisters in this resistance, determined not to be deterred, like a wave building in the open ocean, breaking to the beach, sweeping up all before it, in its wake. This resistance moves inexorably, picking up power, steady, pushing aside those failed non-public officials standing in the schoolhouse door. Roll on, resistance. Roll on. And I this morning, John, as I was looking at the poems I've been writing recently, and most of our listeners know I try to write a poem every morning. I like to say I practice publicly.
That's the what they call the Williams among academics they call that the William Stafford approach to poetry. But
I practice poetry. I practice.
Get up every morning.
Practice publicly. Yeah, get up every morning.
You know,
write it. And then send it out to my friends on Facebook and see what people say, and then figure out what to submit. I was looking at poems for the show this morning and also for submission. And I picked that poem because it starts from the darkness we've all been living in for the last year. And it ends with the hope of the resistance, which in part was realized yesterday, certainly in New Jersey and Virginia, as Democrats and political activists and organizers and good people and resistance warriors in New Jersey and Virginia found a way to weaponize the resistance. And I read somewhere this morning, John, that Republicans are waking up sick this morning because they have let Trump paint them into a box. One of the things we found out yesterday is one of the most important issues, and I prayed for this last summer, every day last summer, that we stood in front of Shelley Moore Capito's office in Martinsburg, demanding that she vote against the repeal of Obamacare. Every day I prayed and thought that we've got to find a way to turn their commitment to destroying health care for 24 million Americans against them in the elections. And in fact, that was a huge issue yesterday in both New Jersey and Virginia.
That was a big issue in Maine.
A big issue? Yeah.
Remember, because they had on the ballot, expanded Medicaid passed overwhelmingly despite that governor's refusal. And
right. The original fascist, LePage.
Yeah. It's been kind of profound. However, another angle on this, I was see if you get your commentary on that. Yeah. is that I see that Trump is making a whirlwind tour of the Asian area, and he stopped in India, in which they kind of just said, "Well, we'll think about it. move on." And then he heads over to China, where Xi Jinping, or is that his name? Xi Jinping. He seems to be waiting for him with an offer that sounds a little bit to me like this: You look like you're having a terrible time. You're getting all upset about North Korea and about security and the Far East. You know, we can take care of that for you. We can take care of the whole thing, okay? And, you can have your little free market. We're going to focus on, what's he going to put? Artificial intelligence, electric cars, and solar technology.
Clean energy. Green energy.
And then they're going to sort of focus on that, and we're going to go along with, computer chip, potato chip, who cares, kind of. I mean,
well, it's sort of like that. I mean, actually, you're almost giving Trump and America too much credit, because there still isn't any kind of serious economic plan, and certainly not any serious plan for the real economy, right?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it.
the economy that's grounded in people's wages and take-home pay. I'll tell you something else about yesterday, John. And this is something John Case and I have been talking about for months now. Actually, years. Going back to, 2011, 2012, when I was first on the radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, with John on the Winners and Losers show when y'all were at Shepherd University. And that is, we are finally beginning to hear Democratic Party leaders outside the Bernie sphere talk about improving the quality of life for Americans. Right. I think it was Donna Brazile I was watching last night who said, you know, this is a clarion call to us. We have to put forward policies that are designed to improve the quality of life and standard of living of every American, that we have now been through the Clinton period, and it's over, and that while many of us loved the administration of Bill Clinton back in the 90s, it had a very different outlook on the country and on legislative policy and on economic policy than what we need today. And that's because it was a much different period of time. We had had stagnant wages when Clinton was elected president in 1992. We'd had stagnant wages for 12 years. It wasn't the crisis it is now. After 40 years, we had a healthcare crisis. And Clinton's economic policies were basically what I call nibbling around the edges. And I think now we know as Democrats that we have to move boldly, that we have to take adopt policy positions and legislative priorities that will seek to advance the standard of living, quality of life, and a secure future for American families. And that's one of the huge wins coming out of yesterday, a new outlook for the Democratic Party that is much more aggressive and deals much more fundamentally with what's wrong with the American economy. We know what it will take to fix it, and it can be fixed, but it would take a serious big time legislative proposals. So you were going to say something, John. I heard you clear your throat.
No, I just was. I was thinking about the how the emergent leadership heading both in this coming election cycle, running for Congress. Because obviously, if we could take over Congress, either House or both, the House or the Senate, well, then you could definitely throw some big logs in front of this little fascist train that's in the administration. I don't. You might not yet be able to turn everything around, but you could certainly stop the train, I think. And that's important. So I on the other hand, I kind of miss the. I was kind of hoping there would be, you know, another big demonstration in Washington in January the year after the Women's March that would, and around the country like there was last time, that would sort of put into the streets some of this. But I guess the energy is headed mostly into the elections. Is what I'm told. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, it feels that way. And of course, we in the West Virginia resistance are beginning to talk about next year, and we're beginning to talk about not just talk about, but individuals who are coming out of, not coming out of, but who've been active in the resistance are gearing up to work hard for Sammy Brown, not organizationally, but individually we are. And we're going to be working very hard in the 2nd Congressional District in West Virginia. And also people are beginning to look at the governor's race in 2020 and beginning to think about that and what kind of campaign could win and what kind of candidate could win.
Right.
John, let me do this.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was hoping that you. I was hoping you'd been thinking about Al Franken for president.
You know, Al Franken would be great.
I hear he's considering it. You know, I've heard that. I mean, you know, so
he. I think he's being a little cute about it. But I can think of a half dozen people, maybe a dozen people. Al Franken's one of them. Elizabeth Warren's one of them. Bernie Sanders is one of them. A half dozen people that I would be very happy with as Democratic candidates for president in 2020. Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, probably the one senator other than Bernie closest to the American labor movement. You know, he would be a great candidate for president. And Sherrod would lock up those upper Midwestern post-industrial states like Ohio, like Michigan, like Wisconsin, Illinois.
Is he known at all, though, outside of that region?
Not very much. No, yeah. John, not very much. And of course, I'm the first one to admit that last year, before Bernie showed he could win, which he showed pretty early on, I was taking a hard look at Martin O'Malley.
I remember. Yes, I remember. Yeah, I remember you thought he was
pretty
good.
Here's Stewart saying, "My bad." You know, the candidate Stewart thinks looks good may not look good to everybody. And
which one of us figured the 2016 election out completely? I don't think, you know.
It wasn't anybody on Resistance Radio.
There's plenty of error to spread around, you know.
So, John, I want to read another poem.
Go ahead.
I wrote this for my friend Indrani Clark, who's a dancer and actor and voice actor, to read and to move to. It's called A Dark Deathly Culture, and it goes to the issues of racial justice. A dark deathly culture rears its head again. For Americans of color, memories, whether lived or learned, turn to lynchings, debasement, dehumanization. See, racism and white supremacy are at root about denying full humanity to sisters and brothers. Today, denying the humanity and dignity of people of color is the agenda of a gasping, grasping GOP. The pain of racism and anxiety over every interaction rises in the throat and wraps bands around your viscera. But this ain't 1964 in Birmingham, Alabama. We have battled this brutality and brutishness before. Today, we all weigh in against this all-too-American terrible tradition. We are learning to stand together in solidarity and fight like it matters to us all, because it does. In this resistance, built to defend democracy, we will also defend the humanity of us all. So I've been writing.
That's beautiful, pal.
Oh, thank you, John.
I think you should. I think the AFL-CIO should have opened the convention with that, as instead of calling the priest to do an invocation. I think that would have been beautiful right there. You know.
Thank you, brother.
I'm serious, you know, so.
Thank you. Thank you. Right. Well, as most of my listeners know, I have nothing but respect for your judgment about poetry, John. One of the greatest students of poetry I've ever met. Probably the greatest student of poetry I've ever met.
Well, you're going to embarrass me now among some poets that around here that, as you know some of them, so...
John, you got another song handy?
I do. You had on your list Freedom. You want to do that one?
Yeah.
Or Follow?
Let's do Follow. Can you find Follow?
Yeah, I got Follow. I got it queued up, man.
Let's do Follow by Richie Havens, one of the most beautiful songs ever written.
All right, here we go now. It's coming on. Here we go.
Let the river rock you like a cradle. Climb to the treetops, child, if you're able. Let your hands tie a knot across the table. Come and touch the things you cannot feel. And close your fingertips and fly where I can't hold you. Let the sun rain fall and let the dewy clouds enfold you. And maybe you can sing to me the words I just told you. If all the things you feel ain't what they seem, then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't nothing but a dream. The mockingbird sings each different song. Each song has wings, they won't stay long. Do those who hear think wrong? While the church bell tolls its one note song, and the school bell is tinkling to the throng. Come here where your ears cannot hear, and close your ears, child, and listen to what I'll tell you. Follow in the darkest night the sounds that may impel you, and the song that I am singing may disturb or serve to quell you. If all the sound you hear ain't what they sing, then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't nothing but a dream. The rising smell of fresh cut grass, smothered cities choke and yell with fuming gas. I hold some grapes up to the sun.
Okay, you're back online there, buddy.
Good morning again, everybody. That was Richie Havens with one of the most beautiful songs ever written. You know, John, I don't think he ever made a studio recording of that song.
If he did, I couldn't find it. I got it off YouTube from a recording somewhere. But no, it did not mention any album. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I looked for it and looked for it. And finally, I don't even know how I first found it or first heard it, but it has become one of my favorite songs of all time. And with John's help, I've played it on this show and on other shows before we even had Resistance Radio several times.
Yeah.
I love it. And of course, Richie Havens was one of our great musical resistance warriors. Wrote the great song Freedom. He wrote it while on stage at Woodstock.
Yeah, that's I think that's the legend. Yes, right. Yes.
Yeah. 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 So last week,
there's a humorous story about how he was asked to keep playing or something like that. Isn't that true?
Right.
Or he was
the other
guy. Right.
He was one of the first ones on, and then the rain started, and they hadn't hired the helicopter yet, and they couldn't get following acts to the stage because the road to Yazger's farm was so filled.
I know.
They said, Richie, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, I got there late, you know, and they were right. It was a mess. You know, it's a couple of miles away. You had to park, you know, so some cornfield.
I've never asked you this. Were you there, John?
Yeah, I got there late. I got there about midnight. After the first day there, I got there right when Creedence Clearwater was playing, about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was going to go, and then I wasn't going to go, and then my then girlfriend was going to go, and then I got suspicious that she might go.
So you decided to go.
So then I may change my mind later, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. So I got there late, but I heard Creedence, and I'd never heard them before.
Oh, I bet that was
man.
A great
and those speakers
experience.
Were something that you really had not seen at a concert before. I hadn't anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was cool.
Yeah, I would think that Fortunate Son coming out at Woodstock would have been a very, very powerful.
The one I remember is Green River.
Oh yeah,
you know, yeah. That's the one I remember.
Great song.
You know, it just like I don't know, just maybe it was the impact of various chemicals that were, you know, in play. Who knows? at the time, but anyway, I found the Rat magazine. I found the Rat magazine tent though, or tarp, would be more accurate.
So you found your tribe at Woodstock.
Well, I only knew one person at the Rat magazine at the time, but you know, since I couldn't find anybody else, since I got there late, you couldn't find anybody, and so I finally found them, and they were sort of loosely connected to some fringe SDS factions that I was aware of at the time.
Don't say too much, John.
Okay. But nonetheless,
so last month
go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. The last month or so, I've been writing more about where our values come from and the foundation of our politics. Just because I think that's essential to finding common ground, and the struggle to build unity is, you know, to go back and start from our values and who's with us on democracy and you know, what comes from a person's soul and what comes from the light within and what comes from our universal connection. All human beings with our Creator, the Divine. And so last week, the resistance in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, God love our sisters who are leading this fight in the Eastern Panhandle. Last week, they went to Jefferson County Commission meeting and hearing in Charlestown to demand that a plaque honoring Confederate soldiers that is on the Jefferson County Courthouse be removed. And there was a pretty contentious hearing, and the chair of the Jefferson County Commission was just out of his mind.
Onesco is his name.
Brown.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, threatened to have Sammy Brown arrested for going past by a few seconds the allotted 3-minute time. I mean, this is an example of when public officials become non-public officials. They become interest group officials. And these guys were taking their lead from the radical right and racist organizations in the Eastern Panhandle. So after that fight, after that hearing, I wrote this poem about our sisters in the resistance. We each see the light of the divine in the other. We draw one another to our common struggle. We seek to each share the burden of the other. Sister warrior women of this resistance, lead now finally with a loving heart and a fearless soul. Take the place reserved for you amongst the powerful sisters and mothers before. Tubman, Truth, Stanton, Anthony, Parks, and so many more. May together we fail not to face the fascists and to run the racist from our cities.
You know, it would be worthwhile, Stuart, seriously, if at the next Labor Council meeting, which is on the third Tuesday, if we could get a resolution so we could communicate to an objection, because Sammy is an officer of the Eastern Panhandle Central Labor Council, as an offense, you know, that, you know, we take note of. It might be if you wanted to draft
that.
I will
be back. I do have the time.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Yeah, that'd be, I think that might be worth doing, so, yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
The three fools on the Jefferson County Commission are, if it was not so damaging, they're doing some other bad things to the county. The whole business about the public service division, where now all of a sudden now the entire sewer services of the county are going to be managed by the town of Charlestown.
Oh, man.
Because they don't want to fund the county public service, and the town of Charlestown's sewer and disposal resources are ancient, need to be replaced. But see, the problem is, so does the county, same one here in Harpers Ferry, and then there's no money now, no federal money. There's no Senator Byrd. Okay. So here we are, and these guys are coming. Well, I don't want to pay the county. I don't want to pay the taxes for it. I don't want to pay to rebuild it. I don't want to pay the usual
personal. I got mine. You get yours. I'm not paying for anything public. I'm only paying for what I can use privately.
Right.
Rejection of the common good. Right. Right, John.
Well, that kind of thing. I mean, you see why? Who was that famous congressman that was a partner with Dr. King, who delivered practices sermons to the chickens?
John Lewis.
Yeah, John Lewis. Well, you start to understand how he would say, you know, the chickens understand the sermons better than some parishioners.
Speaking of John Lewis, let me read my last poem of this show. We've got more show to come. Well, speaking of time on the show, what? Give me a time.
You're at 40 minutes into the hour.
Okay, great. So we got some time left. Don't go anywhere. Please bear with me while I read this poem again, going to the foundation of our values, the foundation of our meaning, the foundation of our being, and where we seek to find unity. While we rage against evil and mourn out loud the destruction of democracy, we must ever remember that our efforts are born in the struggles of our own souls, that all that is good ultimately comes from love. We recommit ourselves to an ever-expanding definition of justice. Justice is our love in action. Let us live to see the other as brother or sister. One of the things that has motivated me and my own life and, you know, the parts of my life that have been public over the years has been seeking to find ways to chip away at the concept of the other. It's the concept of the other which prevents unity amongst working people. And so the bosses and the people who try to direct our way of thinking always want to point to somebody who makes us uncomfortable because of their color, because of their gender or gender orientation, because of their origin of birth, because of their first language, whatever it is, who seek to divide by holding up this question of the other. And of course, there is no, if you believe that we're all created in the image of loving divinity, if you believe in the dignity of all humankind, then we can't afford to allow artificial barriers to be raised against one another. And so I've always been motivated by knocking down this concept of the other. And, you know, we're finding a way in this resistance. We're finding a way in this resistance to connect the economic struggles of working folks with, or the struggles for economic justice with broader aspects of social justice, and also the ongoing, ever-present fight for racial justice in America. That the fight for racial justice has been with us since two centuries before the founding of the United States, and it is part of the original sin of the American psyche, which is slavery. And as far as I can tell, it'll be with us. The struggle for racial justice will be with us in America for the future that anybody can see right now. What do you think, John?
I think that the divisiveness gets worse the more compelling the scramble for crumbs becomes.
Yeah.
And although it's probably also true that that just that condition also is fertile ground for the argument that you're presenting, you know, that
right.
Look, rather than shoot each other over these crumbs, why not take a stance towards something better for everybody? And you know, that's it's a tough turning point. You see it happen in union campaigns where folks are kind of forced to make that decision on the job at a certain time and place, and after hearing a whole struggle go back and forth. So it's a hard decision to make, even if you are logically persuaded, because you know, doesn't change the fact that there's going to be a fight at some level, and you're going to have to put some skin in the game to make it happen. So that's the complexities of life, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
This life, anyway. This life.
It's a complexity of life, but it's easier to reconnect or to connect all those what seem like different struggles if we start with our values. And so we see how, for instance, in the Eastern Panhandle, we see how now seamlessly, and it's in part because of the great leadership of Dr. McGill, Dr. Zaki McGill, but we see how seamlessly the resistance groups have come together with the Berkeley County NAACP, led by Dr. McGill,
right,
to work on issues jointly.
Especially and, on, right. That's an important thing.
The vigil for Wayne Jones, we'll all be out there on Monday.
Right.
Monday is the 13th.
I believe it is, yes.
Yeah.
Well, today's the 8th. So okay. I would think, makes 8th. Monday the 13th. You're right. That's correct.
Yeah. There you go.
I have an appointment with up there. Well, that's the time of Fanny's show, unfortunately. But yeah. But we might record that one a little early.
Yeah. Speaking of which, everybody tune in to our sister Fanny Crawford's storytelling show on Mondays on www.enlightenradio.org. The place to be for resistance.
And there's
she's
also on her own site now, which is talltales.enlightenradio.org. You know, so she has
her
podcast up there.
She's a great storyteller, great human being.
Right, and then she's going to be featured in the Shepherdstown men's club. It used to be the men's club. It's not that now. It's the community club. Sorry.
The community building, right?
They're going to have their annual Thanksgiving dinner, and they have a storyteller come. And this year, they've invited her to be their featured storyteller. So.
Oh, that's great.
So that'll be, I'm sure she'll do a good job. And she and Stosh, they've been kind of co-hosting the poetry show.
Yeah.
No, it's not the poetry show, the storytelling show here.
Uh-huh.
And having a good time.
Good. Before I forget, let me remind our listeners that this is the Rock of Appalachia, www.enlightenradio.org, and you're listening to Resistance Radio with Stuart Acuff and John Case this morning, every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Resistance Radio. Don, what else do we have?
Well, let's talk about Donna. Can we talk about Donna Brazile for a minute?
Sure, yeah.
Since she's catching a lot of flack in some areas for her, I guess, remarks anticipating her book, in which she had a pretty sharp critique of the Clinton campaign. And then, you know, of course, people started to unload on her. Okay, why is this worth refighting? Why, you know, put this thing to bed?
Right.
I mean, although depending on who it's coming from sometimes, what exactly are you putting to bed? That's the question you're always wondering. I mean, have I gone too far or no or what? And we would all like to see bridges, I think, built in the Democratic coalition so that the things like that happened in Virginia can't happen in, you know, lots of places. On the other hand, there is the challenge, I think, as this in order for our movement to succeed, and depending on what kind of leadership kind of emerges here, of how are you going to combine, you know, fundamentally a how are you going to solve the basic income inequality problem? And really put, you know, are you going to put it front and center? Because as the thing that needs to be solved. Now, maybe you want to be really creative and you've got some, some mix, whatever, of policy requirements that you think can get it done. You want to sell it. But, I mean, I think that is the question that ought to be debated at some level and put forward in the middle of things. Otherwise, it just seems like we could easily be provoked in away from the trend. Like, for example, I mean, if I was a 1930s Hitler-type fascist right now, I would be thinking about ways to create provocations so that because I would probably lose any succeeding election, why don't I arrange so there won't be any more?
Right.
You know, that kind of thing, create chaos. Well, yeah, so I fear, you know, that is, you know, because it looks to me that if the free and fair elections were held between now and 2018, looks to me like Trump is going to be completely repudiated based on these results.
Right. Yep.
And wouldn't that be so? Yeah. So there you go. But we know that these guys, You know who I mean by these guys, right? That's the character that Mike sometimes plays, the mafia assassin that won't be identified except by his driver, who is Tony Two Toes. You know. Hello. Oh, did I lose you? I don't know. Maybe we lost Stuart there.
Hey, John.
Hey, I lost you somehow.
Yeah, it just broke up on me. I'm not sure why.
It could be Skype. I don't know. I didn't see any error come up on Skype. But anyway, well, never mind.
Well,
I finished my little bit.
It could easily be on me. The way out here, the cell coverage isn't great. But that's a very good point, John. You made two excellent points because we have to tackle the question of income inequality as a huge priority. That is central to improving the quality of life, standard of living to all Americans. I can put forward three policies off the top of my head. Well, actually, they're not off the top of my head.
You've been working on them a while, okay.
Yeah, I've been working on them for a couple of decades that would immediately change that. Raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Would immediately lift the floor and create upward pressure on all other wages. Guarantee the unfettered right of all American workers to exercise free speech at the workplace and free association at the workplace and decide for themselves whether or not to join together with fellow workers to form a union. We know that unionization and rates of unionization are directly tied to increase in wages or the stagnation of wages in times of low union density. But the freedom to form unions is directly tied to fighting economic injustice and fighting economic inequality. And the last one is a gigantic infrastructure project. Our infrastructure is crumbling, and as my friend John Case, the economist or the economics guru, knows, quality infrastructure is directly related to productivity because of transportation costs and on and on and on, health and safety costs. But when we talk about a massive infrastructure project, you know, what goes on in my mind is reworking of the nation's railroads, reworking of the highways, reworking of our electricity grid system to better utilize green and clean energy, airports, sewer systems, water systems. All of them have been basically ignored since Reagan, and they all need work, and we've got lots of people who need good jobs. So there's three immediate things we could do to begin to tackle economic inequality, and all they require is political will, and they're available to us right away. John, as we start to close out here, what kind of music do we have on tap?
Well, I got the other one that you asked for. I got the other Richie Havens Freedom song, but I can play
Freedom?
Yeah, I got that, but I can play mostly anything that your heart might desire.
That my heart might desire?
You know,
desire?
We could. We have a considerable catalog here of you know, we could do songs that make a difference with the Highwayman or something like that, you know. But
right. Well, that would be good. I was thinking of I was thinking of this song that Joe Cocker recorded 1,000 years ago, and the great new kind of roots rock band Tedeschi Trucks has recorded Space Captain, which is a great.
You're right.
A live version of it.
This Tedeschi Trucks?
Yeah, There's a live version of it played at Eric Clapton's rehab concert. for his rehab place in Bermuda.
He has his own rehab place. What, is he just plan on visiting there regularly? That's the deal there? Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, my Lord. All right. So...
Have you got Space Captain anywhere up there?
Well, just come on. No, just give me one second to...
Tedeschi, I don't mean to hurry you, brother.
Trucks.
Take your time.
Space
Tedeschi
Captain.
Trucks, T-E-D-E-S-C-H-I.
Yeah, I got them. Space. There we go. And, yeah, we do, actually. This is live from Crossroads. You want to hear it? Here.
Yeah, turn it up, man.
Okay, here it is. This gets coming. I don't know how much of it's coming across to you, but...
I hear it.
Once while traveling across the sky, this lovely planet caught my eye. Being curious, I flew close by. And now I'm stuck here till I
of where I've been. We all forgot we could fly. Someday we'll all change into peaceful men and women, and we'll return into the sky.
Y'all, this has been Resistance Radio with Stuart Acuff and John Case on www.enlightenradio.org. We're going out on Space Captain by Tedeschi and Truck today. Be with us next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern. And, John, I will see you Tuesday night at the Eastern Panhandle Central Labor Council.
All right. Is that the third Tuesday? Is that the third Tuesday?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay. So definitely.
The next, okay.
And definitely. Make sure we're at the third. It's the third Tuesday that is the meeting. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. But, anyway.
All right.
All right. Be in touch, brother.
And,
okay.
Yeah. And we should talk about show next week.
All right, man. I'll be in touch.
Take care. All right. Thanks a million. Thanks, everybody. Have a blessed and wonderful day. We won yesterday. The resistance is rising.
All right, pal. Bye-bye.